The Senate State and Local Government Committee will come to order. It's Thursday, March 21st, 2013. The first bill on the agenda is Senate File 662, Senator Lorie.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 662 has two articles. It's broadly speaking, it's the Affordable Care Act. Conformity is Article 1, and that's not really in the purview of this committee, but broadly speaking, the purpose of this is to align Minnesota state law with the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. And many of those are actually in effect already, and a lot of the effects of the Affordable Care Act don't take effect until January 1, 2014. But one of the troubles with not being in conformity is that though they are the law of the land, these rules regarding the manner in which insurance, health insurance functions in Minnesota, enforcement falls to the feds, and we as our in our state, our regulators don't have the authority to enforce the law of the land if we don't come into conformity. So that's largely what Article 1 is, and we've had a lot of really engaged stakeholder groups and really done a good job of ironing out all of the problems that we're aware of that anyone has an issue with in Article 1.
And Senator Lorie, our committee is only concerned about Article 2, Section 10 on page 84, the Market Rules Work Group, and we would like to restrict testimony to that section of the bill.
Okay. Article 2, Section 10 is the work group. And what Article 2 is intended to do is this was market rules, and it was intended to try to make sure that there was a level playing field and that there was some greater consistency and protections for consumers both inside and outside the exchange. There was some concern about whether we should do that, and so what Article 2 did is instead it really created a work group to study what market rules, you know, whether we should have the same rules inside and outside the exchange and what they should look like, and study that over the interim. Section 10 is the establishment of that work group, and that is on, I guess I don't even have the...
Page 84.
Okay, page 84. I have a copy of the work group, but I don't have the engrossed. But Section 10 there...
Senator Lorie, our staff took a look at this section in terms of our guidelines.
And I have one amendment.
We have one amendment, the A-17 amendment.
I have the A-17 amendment to offer.
Would someone like to offer that amendment?
So moved.
Senator Wicklund offers the A-17 amendment, which just specifies who's going to be the chairs of the working group. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, Senator Lorie, proceed with description of the working group.
Well, there's a work group established. The members consist of two members representing health carriers, one from the Council of Health Plans and one from the Insurance Federation, three members representing small employers, Chamber of Commerce and NFIB and the Small Business Minnesota, one member from the Minnesota Hospital Association, a member representing the doctors through the MMA, five members representing consumers, plus the executive director of the MinSure, the Minnesota Exchange, the commissioner of health or a designee, the commissioner of commerce and a designee. The duties of the work group are to review and make recommendations on establishing uniform market rules that will be applicable to health plans offered by carriers in the individual and small group markets broadly. And the review has to take into account the implementation of the ACA in conjunction with the implementation of the Minnesota Insurance Marketplace and the combined effects on the individual and small group markets. The working group must include in their recommendations the following: issues around open enrollment requirements for the individual market, issues around health carrier accreditation, including whether accreditation may serve to fulfill other market rules such as network adequacy and quality improvement. Thirdly, provider network adequacy, including assessing whether network adequacy standards should address availability, quality of the provider, timeliness of service, differences between rural and urban service areas, new care delivery models such as telemedicine and accountable care organizations or ACOs, centers of excellence, the length of waivers and the relationship to cost, Fourthly, the work group is to study information disclosure requirements, including a review to determine whether current state and federal information disclosure requirements can be aligned and coordinated to minimize the administrative burden in the collection of reporting and data. Fifth item to study is metal level offering requirements. And the sixth issue to study is quality of improvement requirements. And that's really what the and then there's a report that the commissioners of health and commerce shall submit from the work group's findings. They should submit that by February 1st of 2014 so that we as a legislature have adequate time in the next session to determine whether we should be adopting same rules inside and out, the exchange, and if so, what those rules should look like. And so it's very scaled back from the Article 2 that you may have heard of prior to the point in when this work group concept was it took its place.
Senator Laurie, are there any legislators on this work group?
There are no legislators on this work group.
Senator Housley.
Madam Chair, Senator Laurie, back in Commerce Committee, Senator Jensen put forth an amendment to delete Article 2 and have the Market Rules Working Group look different. At what point did this change, and why did it change?
Senator Laurie.
Madam Chair, Senator Housley, that amendment was adopted right towards the end of the hearing in Commerce. It had not been shared with me prior to the Commerce hearing. We had no time to really go over the work group. And truthfully, upon looking at the work group, broadly, it had seven industry reps and one consumer rep and four legislators, one from each body, from each party, plus the Commissioner of Commerce or their designee. And, truthfully, I think that a more balanced composition for this work group was called for. So what we have here proposed is what I believe to be a better balanced policy to make sure that a better balanced work group to make sure that we have all stakeholders, of which, consumers are an important part of making the exchange and the entire marketplace work well. And so we took another stab at the work group in the Health and Human Services Policy Division.
Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Laurie, so we need a member appointed by the SEIU. Are they affected by this health care exchange?
Senator Laurie.
Madam Chair, Senator Housley, SEIU, broadly, they participated in the Health Insurance Exchange Task Force, and, I don't know their exact structure of how their membership plays out, but they have been a group that has come forward with very good expertise and advice about how to make sure that the market works for consumers broadly, and that's what they have testified to as their goals in this, and they've been a very effective voice in helping us craft good policy, and that's why their inclusion. I will say, before we came into committee today, one member that was inadvertently eliminated from the Commerce Committee work group, there was the one member from the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, and they don't exist in the policy work group as is currently constructed, and that was an inadvertent omission, and I assured their representatives that they'd be welcomed on this board too, and I'd welcome that inclusion somehow. I didn't have time to write anything.
This is the Market Rules work group again you're talking about.
Yes, this is the
same
work group.
I want to make sure you said policy work group, so I want to make sure there wasn't another work group.
No, it's the same work group. I'm sorry.
There's only one work group.
There's only one work group.
Okay. Did you want to have council draft that language? We could do it right now. Then you would go to 16 members. Would that be the idea?
Yeah.
Or do you want to have an even number? Typically, boards have an odd number, so they don't ever have a...
Well, maybe that, since it just came to me in the 1 minute before session, yeah. they've said that they take me at my word that, and we are planning on going to finance after this, I believe is where it... I know it's been requested by finance divisions, and so we could adopt those changes later and rebalance the work group and have a few more conversations, or, you know, we can continue. An even number is maybe not ideal. So if we added just the underwriters, we would be at an even number.
Senator Hall.
Thanks. To that point, I question the SEIU being involved with this, too. There are a lot of groups out there that know what's going on. I would move that we would put in the Minnesota Association of Health Writer Underwriters in place of the SEIU.
That's a motion. Ms. Stengel, how you want to state that, how that would work? Delete and
yes.
Insert.
Yes. Ask one question, Madam
yes.
Chair. Senator Lori, which group would the Minnesota Underwriters best fit with?
It would probably be...
Put it there.
You know, a number three or, you know, right between number two and three there and be its own thing is, you know, it was its own number before and it was one representative from the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters. I would just stick it in.
I was eliminating the SEIU, mm-hmm. though.
Okay. But to the, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Lori.
To the point of Senator Hall, I mean, I guess I would be uncomfortable adding another industry rep. We did try to balance this well, and what we have is right now, seven industry reps, if you count the two health carriers, the three employers, the hospital association, and the medical association. And then if we added the Association of Health Underwriters, then we're coming to eight, you know, broadly speaking, industry, and then the five consumers. If we went to eight to four, I'm beginning to worry if we have the right balance. And so I'd like to get the underwriters in here. That was an inadvertent omission, but doing it at the exchange of one of our consumer reps, I believe is I couldn't support that.
Okay. Is there any more discussion, Senator Hall?
Just that the union voice to me is a slanted voice, and they would look more at helping their own. And I think I feel uncomfortable them being a part of that. What they do outside is fine, but within a working group like this, I think it would be better to have a balanced approach.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lori.
You know, each of these groups is working toward their interests. I mean, you know, the chamber would be working toward their interests. The NFIB would be working towards their interests, and they have... You know, an agenda as well, and their voice and their perspective is welcomed, but it needs to be balanced. And you know, SEIU again did, you know, provided invaluable advice and was a welcomed voice in the Health Insurance Exchange Task Force. And you know, if you're seeking balance. You're not going to get there if you start eliminating consumers in exchange for industry. That's just not going to be the balance.
I think if we take off SEIU healthcare, then we should probably take off the National Federation of Independent Businesses. They have a lot less expertise on healthcare. Senator Hall.
Yeah, the only question, does this healthcare cover union members? Are they a part of this? I mean, does it cover them?
You know, Madam Chair, Senator Hall, many union members have insurance. Yes, health insurance. And we are talking about market rules that are going to be proposed market-wide, inside and outside the exchange. And so, you know, I'm a bit baffled by your question. It amounts to, do union members have an interest in health care and in health insurance? And the answer is unequivocally, yes, they do have an interest, and they need to be represented.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
Senator Lori, did you just avoid my question?
I said, Madam Chair, unequivocally, the answer to your question is that yes, union members, many of them, some of them are in our ranks of the uninsured, but most of them have insurance and would be affected by the market rules that apply inside and outside the exchange. We're talking about creating market-wide rules. And this is a work group designed to get at that. I'm not sure in what manner. I'm not being clear about your question.
Senator Hall.
Well, let me state it again. Are the union members, the majority of union members, going to be under this insurance plan?
Madam Chair, maybe you can help me out here a little bit.
This is a plan.
This isn't a plan. This is market rules for plans to follow. Market-wide, inside the exchange and outside
Senator
the exchange.
Senator Lori, maybe you need to give us you started that and I interrupted you, but maybe you need to give us an overall explanation of what this bill is, because I think there's some confusion.
Well, Article 2 is largely about this work group to study whether or not to have market-wide rules to provide a level of consumer protection both inside the exchange and outside the exchange. So these rules that this work group would be talking about would be applicable to the entire health insurance marketplace. And union members do have a place in our health insurance marketplace.
Maybe you should just kind of walk us through the handout.
The handout is largely in regards to Article 1, and I don't know how it's been changed for Article 2. Is it, maybe I can, it's been shortened so that it is the current Article 2. Maybe I'll get Manny Munson-Rugala from the Department of Health, because I didn't create the handout. I don't even have it.
So this would just be kind of a summary of the bill before us. All right. And state your
maybe
name
just
again.
Article 2.
Yes, Madam Chair. Manny Munson-Rugala.
Well, Senator Lori, Article 1 is also before us.
No, but Madam Chair, I'm sorry, my point about Article 1, I stepped through the intent of it, and none of the questions have been regarding Article 1.
Yes.
It's ACA conformity in terms of the rules. But if you want to step through Article 1, we certainly can.
Only through the handouts, so
okay.
We have an idea of what the bill is before us.
Then we're going to get Alyssa Von Ruden from the Department of Commerce here as well.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Alyssa Von Ruden, Health Policy Advisor with the Department of Commerce.
Ms. Von Ruden.
I can do a very brief overview of Article 1, just going through the bullet points that are in the slides. So as Senator Lori mentioned, this is really a technical conformity bill. It's to align state law with the Federal Affordable Care Act. It has a number of provisions and technical changes to update things that are actually happening in current law today that are already in effect, as well as for changes that will become effective January 1, 2014. So the protections that are already in effect market-wide include dependent coverage for kids, so coverage for kids up to age 26 on their parents' plans, no pre-existing condition exclusions for kids either, limitations on rescission of coverage, coverage for emergency services without pre-authorization, no lifetime or annual benefit limits, coverage for preventive care services at 100%, including several women's health services that may not have previously been covered, some changes to the appeals and the external review processes for complaints, and rate review transparency and uniform summary of benefits and coverage, or a basic brief overview of what your plan includes.
Okay.
In January 2014, there are a few more that get added to that list. It includes guaranteed issue and guaranteed renewability. This means that you can't have pre-existing condition exclusions for anyone, adults or children. The essential health benefits package is required, so a minimum set of benefits that are available to all consumers. The metal levels or actuarial value levels are established. Premium rate variation limits have been changed a little bit. They're only allowed to vary based on geographic area, age, and tobacco use. The cost-sharing and out-of-pocket limits have been changed a little bit. So for small employer plans, for instance, there's a $2,000 deductible limit and a $4,000 out-of-pocket limit. The specific benefit dollar limits are now eliminated. They're not allowed anymore. clinical trials for any life-threatening condition needs to be covered, and then the grace period for payment of premiums has been extended for qualified health plans. This is an exchange-specific thing if you're receiving tax subsidies for that coverage. And then overall, Article 1 also gives us the authority to enforce the provisions of the ACA.
Okay. Then Article 2. Thank you very much, Ms. Van Roon.
Madam Chair, Manny Munson-Ragala from the Minnesota Department of Health. The purpose of Article 2, as Senator Lori has explained, is to set a base level set of consumer protections that apply to the entire marketplace for small and individual purchasers of insurance. There are four common market rules suggested in Article 2. They deal with metal levels, which is what types of products and what percentage of projected coinsurance are going to be associated with those products, and what are the requirements about offering those products. The second one is about marketing standards. We are saying no marketing can be engaged in that is deceptive or discourages people who are sick from enrolling. The third set of market standards that we're proposing are common network adequacy standards. So if you purchase an insurance product that has a network associated with the product, that network provides access to providers. And then lastly, we're saying that service areas, which is where plans conduct their business, can be no smaller than a county, but if they wish to be smaller than a county, they be drawn in such a way that it's non-discriminatory and serves to basically redline against folks with bad health profiles. The balance of Article 2 then gets into the composition of the study group, and I apologize to the members. I was counting quickly this morning, and I got the 17. It's actually 15.
And we already did discuss the work group.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's very helpful so that we know what's before us is conformity and market rules. So now we're back to, unless there's any questions for the testifiers, we're back to Senator Hall's amendment. Aware what it is? Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members, if I can read Ms. Stengel's writing, the amendment is after line 85.9. This would be insert one. It would be a parens, three close parens. One member appointed from the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters.
Right.
And then renumber paragraphs after that accordingly. And then on line 85.14, delete the second occurrence of one member. Line 85.15, delete appointed by SEIU Healthcare Minnesota.
Any questions about that?
Madam Chair.
Sorry.
I mean, I'm going to oppose this, but if we're going to do it, you'd also need to replace the five, the word five as spelled out on line 85.13 and replace it with four because we're going to only four consumers on this six-member board.
And Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, and I urge members to also vote against this particular amendment. It does tip the balance against consumers, and I think SEIU Healthcare of Minnesota is a most worthy member of this particular study group.
Okay, Senator Hayden.
Madam Chair, I'd also oppose the amendment. I think that as I was watching the back and forth with Senator Hall and Senator Lori, I think that it's clear that a lot of people are going to get health care through the ACA, and so I don't think that there is anything inherent that would conflict from an organization that has worked awfully hard, not for its members, but for what I would consider to be health care that would be good for all Minnesotans. So I think that SEIU Healthcare is a worthy member, and that represents not only its own members, but a lot of, in particular, low-income or moderate-income people that are going to be receiving insurance through the are going to be using the ACA as a whole and using insurance that is going to walk through this process. So I do think that they are a worthy member and that they would have the average Minnesotan's best interest.
Any more comments? All right. All those in favor of the Hall Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay?
No. No.
Motion does not prevail. All right. Are there any more amendments? I think we're not going to.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hosley.
I have a question for Senator Lori. Senator Lori, who is Small Business Minnesota?
Senator Lori.
Small Business Minnesota is a new group. They've been before the legislature many times advocating for a voice that they believe has been lacking in small business representation for some time, and they've become quite active in the public policy arena, and I think they're an important voice in our conversation as well.
Madam Chair, Senator Lori, how many members are in Small Business Minnesota?
I'm not certain how many members are in Small Business Minnesota, but again, they're a group that's become very engaged and really working hard to represent the interests of small businesses, and I think their voice is of value in this process.
Senator Housley.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A-15 amendment. I think you have it.
Madam Chair, Senator Housley, and members, it'll be the A-18.
Oh, A-18.
Updated for the engrossment. Yep.
I'm looking at the
engrossment.
I should make sure this is what
we want. Okay, good. Madam Chair. Sorry. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there someone here from the Small Business Minnesota who could speak to us about their position and their anybody who represents them?
Is there anyone here from Small Business Minnesota? And there is an amendment being passed out, and I don't see anyone. No one's come forward to the table. Okay. I didn't get the amendment. You're supposed to give it to me first. Senator Lori, you have the amendment?
Yeah. Madam Chair, yeah.
Madam Chair?
Senator Housley.
What this amendment does, it just goes back to what we did pass in Commerce Committee that Senator Jensen put forth, and I'm much more comfortable with the board looking like this in the Health Insurance Market Rules Working Group.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lori.
Senator Housley, I would oppose the A-18 amendment. As we got this into the Health and Human Services Committee, there was a different idea about how to balance this well. I mean, as you go through this, there's really only one member here truly looking at the interests of people buying health plans in the individual market, and I really don't think it has the balance that we'd like in recommendations that come back to the legislature.
Any more discussion on the A-18 amendment?
Roll call.
Yeah, roll call, please.
A roll call has been requested. Any more discussion? The clerk will take the roll.
Pappas?
No.
Eaton?
No.
Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden?
No.
Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Peterson?
This is helpful for me.
Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Torres Ray? Wickland?
No.
There being 4 in favor, 7 opposed, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Members, have any other amendments? And anybody in the audience that would like to testify on the working group? All right. Any motions?
So moved.
Senator Hayden moves that Senate Bill 662. Senator Anderson.
Could we have a roll call on this?
Okay. Roll call has been requested on the motion that Senate Bill 662 as amended be recommended to pass. We amended? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And move to where, may I ask?
It goes to Finance.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that this would go back to Commerce Committee, since we made some changes since it came through there, since it left there.
Amending the motion. Okay. Who made the motion originally? Senator Hayden? Senator Hayden made the motion. The bill be recommended to pass as amended and go to Finance Committee. Senator Hall is amending the motion to recommend it pass as amended and go to Commerce Committee. Is that correct, Senator Hall?
Yes.
Okay. And
roll call
on the Hall's amendment to the motion, amended motion to the motion. Okay, then the Secretary will take the roll on the Hall motion.
Pappas.
No.
Eaton.
No.
Hall.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Dahl.
No.
Hayden.
No.
Housley.
Yes.
Johnson.
No.
Peterson. Scalzi.
No.
Thompson.
Yes.
Torres Ray. Wicklund.
No.
The motion fails on a 4-7 vote. So we're back to the original motion by Senator Hayden, and a roll call is requested on that motion. The Secretary will take the roll on the Hayden motion to pass the bill and send it to Finance.
Pappas?
Yes.
Eaton?
Yes.
Hall?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Dahl?
Yes.
Hayden?
Yes.
Housley?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Peterson? Scalzi?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Torres Ray? Wicklund?
Yes.
And that motion passes on a 7-4 vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members.
Senator Lori. The next bill on the agenda is Senator Benson's 1208.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have Senate File 1208.
I can't hear you.
Cranberry walnut.
There's cranberry walnut bar for everyone, or just
for everyone? Or for just you?
Sorry, Senator Benson.
It's okay.
Did you know that we have food all the time in here?
I do. I'm on the kitchen with you.
Of course. That's all he knows. Sorry, Senator Benson. Welcome to state and local government, not pensions commission.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have Senate File 1208. But I do have an author's amendment, if someone could make that motion for me.
Madam Chair, I move.
Do we have it?
It's coming right now.
Okay. Who said they'd make it?
Either one of us.
Everybody has the handout, yeah. Okay. Everyone has this handout. Looks like it's resolutions in support of her proposal. Okay, Senator Anderson moves the delete all amendment for 1208. It's an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those nay. Motion prevails. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to put this bill in shape. This bill moves the creation of the Asante Area Joint Operating Fire District. It is created by joint action between the City of Asante and any of the townships listed in the bill. Contiguous townships may join in the future. Currently, a joint powers agreement exists, which does functionally the same activity as this board will be doing once this joint operating authority is approved. Taxes are shifted from the townships and the city to the Joint Powers Board. And so while we are creating a new taxing authority, we are not creating new tax revenues. We're moving to this position so there can be more transparency. The hearing will be in one place. All the funds going to the fire authority will be in one place. And as you have before you, we gathered resolutions in support of this bill from the townships that are impacted by it. And I have here the mayor of the city of Isanti, who will be, I'll let you, Madam Chair, call the testifiers as your list reflects.
Thank you, Mayor Wimmer. Welcome to the committee.
Actually, the mayor couldn't come
today. Oh, the mayor is not here.
Yes.
All right.
I apologize.
That's okay.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself then for us.
My name is Randy Paulzine. I'm the fire chief of the district right now, of the Joint Powers District. Our district, could I give a little history of it?
Please.
We service 195 square miles in the southern half of Isanti County. We respond to approximately 700 runs a year, just a little bit over. We provide fire and emergency crash rescue type services and pre-transportation care to our taxpayers. We operate out of three stations, and with the location of our stations, we've actually got two life saved so far this year by automatic defibrillators and CPR and stuff. Our ambulance in southern Isanti County, our ambulance system, although I consider it one of the best in the whole nation, we're served by Alina, Lakes Region, and North Memorial, and they're excellent caregivers. But they're all 16 and 18 miles away. So if you're not getting air in that distance, you don't last very long. So we've done a pretty good job of that. We started our joint powers agreement, our fire district by joint powers agreement, in 1998, and we've been operating under that structure ever since. What really brought this to light, or this issue to light, was the city of Isanti and Mayor Wimmer, who couldn't be with us today. When the firefighters' relief monies or their retirement monies took kind of a dive, like all the rest of the retirements in the whole country, the city of Isanti is solely responsible for those funds. And that doesn't transfer over to the joint district. And at that point, about 5 years ago, they said, geez, we got to do something about this because it goes against their liabilities as far as their operating capitals and everything else. So that's kind of what instituted this whole thing to begin with. Secondly, if somebody wants to find out what they're actually spending in fire service in our district, they have to go to the seven political subdivisions, go through their books to find out how much is actually going to the fire district. So it's kind of a cumbersome system. Secondly, each one of those entities, due to the nature of our auditing system here, has to audit all those monies. Then again, the fire district has to audit them again at the end of the year. So we're kind of wearing the numbers out on the checks by the time they've been looked at so many times. Everybody's looking at everything. So my board has sent me here to kind of explain those issues to you folks.
You had an agreement in 2005.
Is this that still was our second agreement. That's correct, and we're still operating under that agreement mm-hmm. today, although it's been amended a couple of times.
So, what's the difference between the agreement you're operating under and what you're trying to do now?
I'd like our attorney to explain that for us. But quite honestly, there'd be really no difference in the structure. Every one of the entities of this fire district has an equal vote. One vote per township, and the reason for the joint venture in 1998 was the townships didn't feel the city was treating them fairly, and quite honestly they weren't. So this board was developed to give everybody equal say. This board develops the budget, they make all the decisions for the fire and emergency rescue services in our area, and everybody gets an equal vote. And I just remarked to our board meeting last night, in the 13 years that board's been in process, and we've had several members come and go, there's never been a dissenting vote on any issue that they've discussed, but they discuss everything to the nth degree before they vote on it. So it's kind of an oddity that everybody gets along so good.
Senator Pence.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You wanted to say something.
And we'll let our next testifier make his brief comments. And then I do have an oral amendment that I inadvertently forgot to add to my author's amendment.
Thank
Please
you,
Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Peter Tiede.
Tiede.
I'm an attorney with offices here in St. Paul. I've worked with the fire district since at least 2005. I drafted the joint powers agreement that they are operating under now, and have had a hand in the drafting of the legislation that's before you. The intended change is not in the operation of the district, and there shouldn't be any change in how much taxes people pay. But as the fire chief indicated, the goal is to first centralize the pension benefits sort of where they belong, so the city isn't sitting on the pension benefits for all the firefighters, in effect, for the townships, which is how it is now. The way the joint power agreement works is that the city had a functioning fire department and was providing service under contract to the towns, but there was so much of it going on that we went to a joint powers agreement where there would be a joint governance, but it stayed the city's fire department, and that's the unfair part that the fire chief is talking about, because the city's still sitting on all these firefighters as their employees. So that's item number one. And the other two changes, as Mr. Polzin indicated, it'll be easier to audit this thing because there won't be seven governmental bodies now. There'll just be one, and easier to track how much everyone's spending on their taxes. So this legislation is intended to not change much about the way the district operates, its governance, what anybody pays for taxes, but to create some additional transparency and to place the burden of the pension benefits more fairly where it belongs.
It's interesting you brought up pension benefits, because we actually have talked about this in the Pension Commission. And Chief Polzin, something that you might want to think about is thinking about putting your pension funds with the State Board of Investment, because the return has been so much higher from the State Board of Investment than you've been able to get with your local funds, just because it's a lot of money that they're investing. And we actually have a provision in the pension bill to just inform people of that difference so that you can make kind of an informed choice.
Madam Chair, we invested with the State Board of Investments as soon as that possibility was made available to us. 2 years ago, we had the fourth best investment profile in the state of Minnesota coming back to us. We've done very well with the State Board of Investments, and I also happen to be the president of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, and I never miss a chance to promote the State Board of Investments.
Great. So you've already voluntarily gone in.
100% of our money is in the State Board of Investments. It's an excellent system.
I'll let Representative Kahn know that. She'll be very happy.
It's the best thing that ever happened to the Fire Relief Associations. Absolutely the best thing. And the really good thing that the legislature did is we don't have to pay any fees as fire service. Mm-hmm. It's a free service to us. So if a fire department doesn't invest in it, they need their heads examined.
That's pretty strong.
Anyone else wants to testify? Any other discussion? Oh, yes. Senator Benson, you had your oral amendment.
I did want to move an oral amendment, Madam Chair, offer, if someone could move for me. Page 2, line 5, what subdivision 8 does as drafted is immediately eliminate the existing joint powers agreement, which would leave them without fire service or without a fire service agreement if they didn't enact
The
new joint powers. And so my amendment, after the period, insert, if the fire district is established as described in subdivision 1, comma, then, and then lowercase t, the Isanti Area Joint Operating Fire District Powers Agreement, and so forth.
The district is established in subdivision 1. Then what was the last, the end of the sentence? If the fire district is established in sub 1, then?
Comma, then, and then you need a lowercase t on the Isanti. So, but council can take care of that as we go forward.
Did you get it? Uh-huh. Okay, why don't you read it back?
On page 2, line 5, after the third period, insert, if the fire district is established as described in subdivision 1, comma.
Then the Isanti area.
Yep.
Oh, I see. I didn't see where she was putting it. Okay.
And then the rest of the sentence remains the same.
Madam Chair, I'll move that.
Senator Anderson moves the amendment as stated by Senator Benson and Senate Counsel. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair,
Senator Benson, on line or in subdivision 2 on page 1, talks about membership and says one additional member shall be appointed by the district, which may be the chief of the district or his or her designee. And then it says on the second or the last statement that they can't vote. So I'm kind of confused as to why would you want to put, I mean, if you want a voting member on there, why would you even think about putting the chief on there as appointed to the district? I mean, unless you don't want a voting member, then why even designate it, allowing the chief? I don't understand that situation.
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, I think it's so that they're required attendance at meetings to give input and guidance, but to not have them vote to avoid a conflict of interest.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Senator Benson, do you want an extra member on there that votes?
One additional member shall also be appointed by the district, but if that additional member is the chief, they can't vote.
I understand that.
I mean, that's what you're saying. Is that what you want? I'm trying to clarify what you your question.
Right. Madam Chair, I'm getting advice from the organization that helped with the drafting. They are willing to have the chief on the board, but because he is not an elected official, they don't want him to have the authority to levy taxes, approve budgets, and so forth. So they could agree to appoint someone else, but they would lean towards the fire chief. And I suppose we could make the language stronger and say the fire chief is on the board, but he can't vote. Mm-hmm. If that's the recommendation of this body, if you think it would be clearer, we could work on amending that language. But that is the intent.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'm confused a little bit about, I would think if you want an extra member on there that's going to vote, that you wouldn't even, you would then say the chief could be an ex officio member or something like that, but.
And Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, the sentence, one additional member may also be appointed by the district. It doesn't say a voting member. It just says one additional member, which may be the chief or his designee. I think the language might be a little soft, and we could say the board may appoint the chief as an ex officio member of the board, and that would be cleaner. It would get to the same end if Senator Anderson, is that language you would like to work on drafting?
I'm just thinking out loud here. Behalf of what you're coming forward with. So if this is okay the way it is, that's fine. But I just want to make sure that you're okay with that.
Working on clarification language.
Thank
but
you.
I did want to ask a question of Chief Polson.
Yes.
Chief, how do you feel about the insurance surcharge for, to help with the pensions?
The pension fund that we have now, and I'm sure you're very, very familiar with the bill. Our 2% monies have continued, or the state aid that comes into both the PERA and the Fire Relief Associations is constantly going backwards. And it's because we build more fire-restrictive buildings, safer buildings, insurance premiums are down, valuations down. There's a multitude of things that are going down. The problem we have is we're not keeping up with it, and it's getting to be a burden, especially for our little city. It's getting to be a huge burden to try to make up that disparity. Personally, I'm in favor of it. I don't know how else you can do it I'm sure there's a million ways you could get to it, but we really need somehow to get that money back into the accounts, because accounts are going backwards, and we need to do something. And every year it goes backwards and backwards and backwards. So however you arrange it, and I know Brian Rice is here. He's very capable of speaking on that issue. But we got to do something pretty quick.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Stengel, are you ready with a proposal?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'll be doing here, I'll explain it before I read the amendment. We'll be getting rid of the first sentence that talks about may appoint an extra member, and then we'll require that the fire chief serve as a non-voting member. So what that looks like on page 1, line 16, delete the word 1. Page 1, delete line 17. Page 1, line 18, delete everything before the word each. on page 1, line 19, after the word shall, insert serve as a non-voting member of the board, and delete provide advice only. And on line, page 1, line 20, delete everything except the period. So that last sentence would then read, the chief of the district shall serve as a non-voting member of the board.
Madam Chair?
Or may serve, maybe, if you wanted it to be optional. Senator Benson?
I would welcome that amendment with the word may, as Chair Pappas described. And if I could have someone move that amendment for me.
So moved. The chief of the district may serve as a non-voting member of the board.
Yes, Chair. That seems
so important. It doesn't say anything, though, about an additional member appointed by the district.
Right.
And I don't know if you still wanted that in there.
I do not see a functional reason for having an additional member who is not a representative of one of the communities, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Titi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm being told from behind that we would request that say chief or designee because it may be a secretary or someone.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, could I maybe enlighten you just a little bit on why that additional member was in there?
I'm sorry, repeat
could
that.
Could I enlighten you folks on why that wordage was in there from
yes,
the beginning?
Yes, Mr. Polson.
We used to have a secretary treasurer hired to do the bookwork, and now we do that internally. So
okay.
That additional person was the secretary treasurer of the district, and now that's done.
And you don't need it?
We don't need it anymore.
Okay.
So that can very well be taken out. We do that all internally. That's where that came from. I'm glad you caught it.
Okay. So we do keep the language that each member appointed by the city council or town board will have individual voting authority. And then the next sentence is changed to read, the chief of the district or designee may serve as a non-voting member of the board.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Okay,
someone want to move that? Senator Anderson?
So
Senator
moved.
Anderson moves the change as described. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Any other questions on this? Then motion to approve it?
So
well,
moved.
Whatever.
As amended.
Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 1208 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. All right,
thank
next
you.
We're going to take up Senator Boniff's bill, 1232. Senator Boniff did not like being at the end of the agenda. At the end of the agenda, originally? Oh, that's so funny.
Well, you originally asked to be at the end, but now your committee's done.
Exactly, Madam Chair. We thought, I knew this would be quick, but we thought that in case my committee ran long.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
And I am, Madam Chair, members, I'm joined by Mr. David Mehta from the city of Minnetonka.
Welcome to the committee.
There is an amendment, Madam Chair.
So we'll pass out the amendment. The one first.
Here's the bill.
Yeah. Well, this is sort of your first committee, except you had to go to rules.
Well, Madam Chair, actually, it's my third because I also started in the election subcommittee,
oh, okay.
And then I went to rules,
okay.
Where they did make material changes, and now we're here.
So maybe you want to explain your overall goals, and then you would need to explain the amendment before we adopted it.
Very good. Thank you. So the overall goal is to have an e-poll book pilot project. The city of Minnetonka did an e-poll book pilot in 2009, and it has been very successful. And so for members who were around when we were debating the whole voter ID issue, the idea of using electronic poll books as a voter verification measure came forward. Since then, we've established a working group where we have been meeting really for a couple months, working amongst ourselves with House and Senate counsel, as well as with input from the Secretary of State's office about how we might go forward to try the e-poll books on a broader basis, trying it in townships, trying it in a big city. So we've established four different places, and the pilot would include using an e-poll book process, as well as you'd have a paper poll book alongside it, so that if there are any issues in an off-election year, we could catch that. The bill description, the bill has two main parts. It does the small pilot project, as I mentioned, and then the reason why we are here before you is because the bill creates an e-poll book task force that will study the option of using the driver's license information as a means of identifying residents. We had really, when we discussed this a couple years back and had vendors come and present the whole concept of e-poll books, during that discussion, we talked about having the driver's license be part of the overall pilot, but we learned that there are so many different issues with regard to both the programming and the software technology and the cost, that rather than do that the first year of this pilot, we put forward a task force to study the issue. And that is why we're here today, is to address that.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Hall.
Is the photo involved with this?
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, the photo would just be with the driver's license part of it, and so that is in the task force. We learned that we met with the
What do you mean it's in the task force?
The task force will be studying
how
we might use the driver's license when we do the ultimate rollout. That is our intention, is to use those driver's license photos. And then, you know, when they're not available or when somebody's not in the system, to have a separate process. But we learned that right now there's issues with our data security that won't be solved by the time we're ready to do this. If you've been reading about data breaches both within, you know, the DNR issue as well as the Department of Health is grappling with some data issues. And so rather than get in the fray of all that, we wanted to make sure that when we do it, we have good data.
Yeah. Do you want to do your amendment or have your witness go next?
Let's just go ahead and do the amendment.
Okay. Some of this is input from our staff?
Yes, exactly.
Do you want to explain it, or would you want me to have Ms. Stengel?
I'll let Ms. Stengel explain
it. Okay, Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator.
Just do the important things.
Bonoff and members. Lines 1.2 through 1.8 of the amendment address an issue that came up in rules yesterday, talking about which of the technology requirements must be met, because you can use the poll book for same-day voter registration and or for checking the voter status. So the poll book technology would be different for each of those. And this just makes it very clear that everything applies where it needs to be applied. And then on line 9, 10, and 11 of the amendment, we're changing the conflict of interest sentence a little bit. So after the amendment, it would read, no one who has a financial interest in a manufacturer or distributor of electronic roster technology is eligible to be a member of the task force. Does the same thing, just stated a little bit differently and in a manner that Ms. James thinks is more appropriate with our guidelines. And on line 12 of the amendment, we're deleting subdivision 5 on compensation.
Why are you deleting line 11 and 12? That also was deleted?
Oh.
The director of Department of Public Safety deleted.
Page 2, line 11 and 12. Mm-hmm. You're on page 3.
Oh, no wonder. I'm confused. Okay. Does not need to comply. All right. All right. Any questions on the amendment? Then Senator Eaton moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Mr. Maeda.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Maeda. I'm the city clerk.
Sorry.
Aida. I am the city clerk of the city of Minnetonka. As Senator Bonhoff mentioned, we first started a pilot project using the electronic poll books back in 2009. We had a very small pilot project, and at that point, we were actually doing something similar to what's in Section 1 of the bill, where we were using poll books both for pre-registered voters and also for Election Day registration. And the pilot project, we feel, was very successful. In fact, when we went forward, it was our election judges in the city that really were the ones that pushed me to keep using it. And so since 2009, we have used poll books on a very limited basis, and it's been just for Election Day registration. And the reason we have limited it to Election Day registration is that piece is something we can do without really touching the voter registration system at all. So we can do it entirely in the city of Minnetonka without having to involve Hennepin County or the Secretary of State's office. What's really good about this bill is it really starts the next step, and it doesn't get the counties and the state involved, because it will start getting us more integrated with the voter registration system. I think it's really good also to get the cities, and I've talked to each one of them, involved in the pilot project, because I would like to see someone other than the city of Minnetonka folks looking at what this technology really can do. And similarly, the task force, that's part of their mission too. And I think this bill really does make logical sense to get us to the next step where we'll actually start using electronic poll books in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, sorry for being away from the table when the amendment was adopted, but just curious, on page 4 of the amendment, it said that we're deleting the compensation subdivision 5. I just was wondering what the reason was for that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Senate and House members would be eligible always for per diem if approved by the chair rules or whoever. And so with regard to outside members, when we looked at who were asking to put on this, most of them, it's really part of their job functions. And so it seemed as though having to carry a cost in this bill for them fulfilling their own job was something we didn't need to do. Okay. So, for example, Madam Chair, Mr. Maeda has been coming to meetings every week, and we have not reimbursed him for his parking year's mileage because the city of Minnetonka, this is part of his overall responsibility, has taken care of that, and they have been very gracious and generous about that. But we presume, really, if you look at who's going to participate, that will be the case with our members.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, there's a sunset date, 2014. Okay. Wonder when this task force went away or if it continued on. And
right. So, there's a sunset date. Okay. Okay. Any motions for Senator Bonhoff?
So
Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 1232 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Don't thank us until we vote.
Oh.
Now you can thank us.
Take your thank you back, and now you can thank us.
Thank you.
Senator Dahl, we're going to take you next, but let's take Senator Claussen first. This is like last night, right? Senator Claussen. And then I promise, Senator Dahl.
You got to be here anyway.
Yep. Senator Claussen, welcome to the committee. And I see that you have an amendment.
Yes.
But since this isn't your first committee, why don't you explain your task force to us, and then you can explain your amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon to introduce to you Senate File 991. I'd like to just give you some introductory information about it and why we believe the Emerging Adulthood Task Force is necessary. Currently, in our state, there is a real disconnect in the services and supports between childhood and adulthood. And once a person hits the age of 18 or 21, the services that they have depended on or now need in order to lead a productive life are not available. The state makes investments in our youth, but often the investment ends at age 18. And the intent of Senate File 991 is to create an emerging adulthood task force to assist vulnerable, unaccompanied youth as they transition into adulthood and how existing resources can achieve greater efficiency and improved outcomes for our youth. Unaccompanied youth includes young people exiting from foster care, and that's approximately 300 to 500 young people annually. It also includes young people that are incarcerated or exiting incarceration, and those that are homeless. Homeless unaccompanied youth number over 2,500 young people, as identified in a recent Wilder Foundation study. Unaccompanied youth are in the transitional stage of moving to adulthood and often lack family support in meeting their basic needs. And I'd like to share with you some examples that I have experienced in my former life. I was an administrator in the Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan Public Schools, and one of the federal programs I administered was the McKinney-Vento Homeless Assistance Act. Those of you that are not familiar with McKinney-Vento, it basically has three responsibilities to schools to assist homeless students that are still in high school or attending school. It could be of any school age.
And Senator Claus and former Congressman Bruce Vento was very proud of that work.
That's very true. Thank you. Three things that school districts have a responsibility to do under McKinney-Vento. One is to ensure that they stay grounded in the school that they're attending. So if they become homeless, move out of the district, or move out of the attendance area of the school district provides transportation back to their home school. Secondly, they will receive free meal service, breakfast and lunch. And lastly, if there is a need for school supplies, if there are fees to be paid that are academically related, or if there are tutoring needs, these were things that school districts were responsible for. And I'd like just to share a few examples. They are rather narrow because they deal with housing issues, but it kind of points out a little bit about the need for this task force. The first example I'm going to give you is an 18-year-old high school student who became homeless, and he was placed at Cochran House. Cochran House is in Hastings, and it's also a homeless shelter for those inmates that are released from our prison system that currently don't have a place to go to. So we have an 18-year-old that's in a situation with older adults, and I think we could perhaps, as a state, provide a better situation for that student. Another female student who was 19, and again, we do educate some students till age 21. This particular student, her father had died and left her an inheritance. Her mother remarried, and the stepfather was put in charge of her inheritance, spent that inheritance, and then at age 19, she was homeless and had to either go to a shelter or live with neighbors. Another example, 18-year-old pregnant student asked to leave home by her parents. And unfortunately, in our state, there are very few options for housing for students that become homeless under the age of 18, 19, 20. So there are some issues that when students reaching the age of 18 are asked to leave home, these are young people that lack the skills and support systems to be successful in making the transition to adulthood. There are also family crisis situations, death of a parent, bankruptcy, divorce. Many young people become unaccompanied youth due to these situations. The key provisions of Senate File 991 include Subdivisions 3 and 4. Subdivision 3 outlines the seven duties of the task force. Subdivision 4 stipulates that the task force recommendations are to be submitted to be submitted for consideration, and that's an oral amendment that I'll make a little bit later on the date. I believe Senate File 991 is an important step to ensure vulnerable, unaccompanied youth have the assistance and opportunity to develop into contributing members of society. Without support, many of these young people will lack educational opportunities, be enrolled in public assistance programs, and will far too often be incarcerated in the state's correctional system. At this time, I'd like to introduce Mary Regan, Minnesota Council for Child Caring Agencies, and she will offer testimony. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Clausen. My name is Mary Regan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council of Child Caring Agencies. We're a statewide association of providers of treatment services for children and adolescents, and our members are 46 member organizations, operate over 300 programs around the state. We serve children coming from the child welfare system, from the child protection system, from the children's mental health system, juvenile justice system, and homeless youth. So our members really do cross all of the systems that many of these young, disconnected youth that we're talking about. This task force is something that was part of what came out of an intensive retreat process that happened last summer. And you should have something in your packets that talks about that. And it was called the Impact Initiative. And it was an effort that was that brought 27 different stakeholders together for 3 days of intensive facilitated work to take a look at a particular area, and the area that our group looked at was this whole issue of disconnected youth. Senator Clausen mentioned that we have 2,500 homeless youth. We have 350. Children sitting in foster care awaiting adoption, and we have 400 to 500 youth who age out of foster care without permanent connections to adults. In addition, we have an unknown number of young people who age out of the correction system. All of those systems do their thing fairly well, but they do it independent of each other. And we really think that bringing this additional group of stakeholders together, we could really find some improved practice and some improved efficiency and some improved outcomes. We're not talking about trying to come up with ideas for new resources. We really think that working together, identifying some of the issues for these young people earlier in the process, we could make a big difference by collaborating with each other. And that eventually the hope would be that we wouldn't have these disconnected youth who are in the end costing us all a lot of money and certainly not achieving the adulthood and the life that we would want for them.
Thank you very much for that testimony. The jurisdiction of our committee is the task force, and I think the amendment, which I've just misplaced,
yes,
is suggested by Senate counsel to kind of put the task force language in to be consistent with our guidelines.
Yes, Amendment A2.
Okay, would someone offer the A2 amendment?
So moved.
Senator Eaton moves the A2 amendment. Senate counsel, why don't you just tell us the high points of the amendment?
Madam Chair, members, the amendment sets a deadline for appointments to be made. It establishes a deadline by which the Commissioner of Human Services must convene the first task force. It modifies the sunset so that the group will sunset the day after it submits its report or January 16th of 2014, whichever is earlier. So, for example, if the group didn't submit its report at all, it would still sunset. So it's sort of a safeguard on that front. And then otherwise, I would say it's mostly just changing language to reflect the way that we say things in the way we report to the legislature and whatnot.
Okay. Senator Eaton moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Is there any
Madam Chair,
Clausen?
I do have an oral amendment as well. It's line 3.4, 3.5 under subdivision 5, the task force expiration.
Is this to the amendment or to the bill?
It is to the bill. I believe it would be to the bill at this time since you passed the amendment.
We did modify that subdivision in the amendment, but go ahead.
The task force, it should read, the task force shall expire on June 30th, 2014, and then we would eliminate the remainder of the sentence on 3.5 with the exception of the period.
Do you have to modify the amendment?
Yeah, we should amend the amendment to put that date in. But
right now, has it expired before they submit their report?
Is the day after they submit their report, or that just as earlier?
Mm-hmm.
He's asking just to have it expire on a different date. We should just change this date, but it would still expire after its report, and then we should change the report due date.
Senator Clausen, did you want to change the date your report's due so that the report and the task force expire around the same time?
No.
Or you want your task force to continue 6 months after your report is due?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. We just wanted to clarify. All right. So
we just want to
change the amendment.
Yeah, I think we want to amend. We want to delete this line. Delete that line.
I guess I should have let you speak before we did the amendment.
So it is pretty much child welfare, and I don't know why you do it. It's just those people.
Is there anyone here who wants in the room that wants to testify? Are there any questions from members of the committee? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Clausen, Ms. Regan is my constituent, and I have worked with her for a number of years. I worked with this population for 16 years before I became a senator. If you have a conversation with me in a half an hour, I will tell you what these kids need, and she will too. I don't think that we need a task force to let you know that we have an overwhelming number of African-American children, Latino children, minority children that live in poverty, and that they need housing, and that they need a connection with a responsible adult that will help them make some decisions about their lives, and that the overwhelming majority of kids who are in foster care today and in juvenile facilities have been abandoned by many of the systems. So I am going to vote no on this bill because I have dedicated 25 years of my life to speak about these children, and I believe that we know exactly what we need to do in order to give them an opportunity. We do not need a task force to talk about this. We need housing. We need educational opportunities. We have to fight for preserving healthcare access for these kids. And I do understand your intention, and I applaud it. And I really would like to work with you because I know you have tremendous knowledge about education, and you've worked with kids in different settings. But I am not ready to support the creation of another task force that would put recommendations. I can bring you a number of reports that I have collected over the years about the challenges that we face with children that are predominantly minority children in this state who live in poverty, who are placed in out-of-home placement. And so I want you to know that I know the intention, that I admire it, and that I welcome every support and, you know, all of your energy, but I am not ready to put a task force to tell us what we already know.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, you know, my work has predominantly been in suburban, large suburban school districts, and the last school year, 2011-2012, we identified over 200 homeless students in a suburban school district, and I don't think we're necessarily that unique. I think that in this case, just talking about homelessness in unaccompanied youth, I think it's greater than we realize, and I think a task force is needed. I look out in our area, we do have a homeless shelter for unaccompanied youth, 18 to 24. It's a brand new building within the last 3 years. It has 24 apartments, and there's a waiting list of 30 people. constantly. So I think we do need to bring the resources together in the state, because one of the biggest issues I found with the homeless young people, and these are students still in high school, is they become homeless and there is absolutely no place for them to go.
Members, I know the governor put $5 million in his budget for homeless youth, and that's in the so I would suggest that, you know, we put our money where our mouth is, and all these organizations that are part of this coalition, these groups of agencies, you know, talk to their legislators and thank the governor for putting at least $5 million in. I mean, I would like more money for trafficked youth in the bill, but at least we have the $5 million. That's a start for homeless youth, and there's some overlap there. But we, you know, I'm sympathetic with what Senator Torres Ray is saying, that, you know, we have to stop talking about this and start doing something. Senate Counsel has the revised amendment to the amendment.
Madam Chair and members, the amendment to the A2 would be to delete line 1.29, and after line 1.29, insert page 3, on line 4, delete everything after expire, and insert June 30th of 2014. And then also on page 3, delete page 3, line 5, delete everything before the period. So the end result of that will be that the last subdivision will read, the task force shall expire June 30th, 2014.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Clausen. Ms. Regan, I'm a little torn, too, as Senator Torres Reyes and Senator...
Senator Hayden, can we just adopt this amendment, and then we can talk about it overall? Okay, Senator Eaton moves the amendment as stated by counsel that the task force wouldn't expire until June 30th, 2014. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Hayden.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. So, Ms. Regan, we've worked on this a long time. I think Senator Torres Reyes talked about it, Senator Pappas. I know I've personally carried a ton of these bills over the years and will continue to support this issue. I also have a apartment building, if you will, for the kids, for young people 16 to 21 in my district, or maybe even a little more. I sponsored bills that allowed us to, with your help, allow us to continue to allow kids to be in foster care until age 21, et cetera. So, Senator Clausen, I think where I'm torn at is that if the task force is helping to create an environment for communities that don't realize they have a problem, it's one thing. And maybe that's kind of what we're hearing a little bit in terms of the part of the state that you represent in larger suburban communities. But there seems to be this group that has been formally or informally brought together to really look at this issue, and we're already moving legislation that is funding these issues. And so I guess my question would be to Ms. Regan, because I know that you've been part of those groups, formally and informally, what would this task force do that would help us get to where we want to go versus what you guys are already doing and the coalitions that are already have formed together, including the organization you represent, Lutheran Social Service, et cetera? What would this task force do to help this initiative along versus not? And the reason why I say that, and I'll let you answer the question, is where I'm concerned is I don't want a task force to be formed and everybody waits for the task force to get formed. Everybody has membership on the task force. Everybody gets together. In the meantime, the clock is ticking. These kids, these young people aren't getting the services that they need. And we wait for them to, at the end of it, tell us what we already know, frankly, in a strategy that we're already implementing. So, Ms. Regan, could you help me understand why this would be more important than the work that we're already doing?
Senator Clausen?
No, Ms. Regan.
Oh, sorry.
Madam Chair, Senator Hayden, thank you, and Senator Torres Ray, thank you. I completely understand your point. When I started doing this, I had black hair. and there were many other things that were different as well. I'm I'm not interested in another 6 months of meetings that go nowhere at all. And I wouldn't be here if that's what I thought this was going to be. I've been on many task forces. And yes, there are things moving ahead, and the governor does have money for homeless youth. And we did, with your help, Senator Hayden and Senator Torres-Ray, change some of the rules around how long young people could stay in foster care if they didn't have any other place to go. But what we continue to see is that what we haven't done is bring all of the different folks together to take a more comprehensive look. We've gone to this system and we messed around with that. And then we've gone over here to this system and we messed around with that. But we've got these systems are interacting with these all of these kids all of the time. And we think it's time to take a step back. And yes, Senator Torres-Ray, we know a lot about what needs to be done. What we need is buy-in and a commitment to do those things. And some of those things can be done today. Some of those things could be done if there was a shared understanding and a shared commitment. And that's really the hope of this task force. It's time limited. We tried to get the people that could make the difference on the task force together. The only reason for extending the expiration date is to make sure that there's a structure to consult with if, in fact, there are recommendations that can be implemented quickly coming out of the task force. But I have no interest in being on another task force if nothing's going to happen. And to the extent that I can be involved in this task force, I will do everything I can to make sure something meaningful comes out of it.
Any more discussion? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Claussen, I hear people talking about youth here, but in the title, or line 1.2, it talks about emerging adults. Are we just talking about youth, those kids under 18?
Senator Hall.
Senator Claussen.
Madam Chair. Usually we kind of define that as like 18 to 24.
Youth?
Yeah. Emerging youth, 18 to 24.
Emerging adults.
Okay, so this is not about youth. It's about emerging adult.
Generally 18. Between the ages of 18 and 24. That seems to be where there's a gap in services that are provided for young people that are moving into adulthood.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify, and certainly would agree with Senator Torres-Ray and Senator Hayden, that I think we've got lots of programs out there, and which we all appreciate. Don't think we need another one to try to figure out what to do.
Madam Chair.
Senator Claussen.
Madam Chair, I didn't realize things were so good here in Minnesota. Yeah.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am just going to make a public commitment to Ms. Reagan. I will work with you to make sure that we have a real plan to bring these agencies together and do this work that needs to be done and eliminate a lot of the fragmentation that we have in the system. Actually, I can tell you that I have bipartisan support in that effort. Both members of the minority and the majority caucus want to do that. They want to eliminate fragmentation. They want to eliminate bureaucracy, and they want transparency in these systems. And we are getting a lot of resistance in these systems. I do not know if a task force will do it because we've tried this. I think we're going to need more than that. So I want to make a commitment to work with you on that, and I think Senator Claussen actually understands this quite well. So I seriously do not believe that we need a task force to put together these recommendations. What we need is a group of committed legislators who can review this with you and actually put some legislation next year to get it done. I believe firmly that that's what needs to happen. So I think that there is a lot of fragmentation. I know that systems are not connected, and that's why we have the situation we have with these kids, because we don't know. Systems are not really responsive and are not and are not accountable. And so I do think that you are correct on that, and I think that the work needs to happen here. But again, I just don't believe that we need another task force.
Members, I just want to encourage members to just vote the bill out and send it to the floor today. I think these conversations can continue, that if the groups decide to put their energy and effort behind if the groups decide to put their energy and effort behind getting the funding for the homeless youth in the Health and Human Services Finance Committee, then it does seem to me that you're more in an implementation mode than a study mode. But I think having the study language will be there, and it won't come up on the floor for weeks, obviously. Having the language out there is still going to be a reminder to everyone that this work does need to get done. So is there any more discussion?
I just have a technical question.
Senator Hayden.
Senator Clausen, Ms. Regan, as I was looking at the composition of the group, it looks like you only have two members, two youth that have experienced homeless or at risk of experiencing homeless. I don't want to take up too much of the committee's time to try to work through that, but I guess what I'd like to do, Senator Clausen and Ms. Regan, whoever works on it, is to see if we can grow that group a little bit. Madam Chair and Senator Clausen, I think what happens is that often the reason why things don't work as well is because the people who we're trying to serve don't have a loud enough and a large enough voice. And so maybe if we can, if we are going to do this, and I'm going to support it today hesitantly, but I think that we should really think about expanding our maybe dealing with the group to expand the young people who are experiencing homeless to be a larger part of the task force.
Madam Chair, just a clarification about moving this. We would prefer to have it in Health and Human Services Finance.
I'm sorry, Senator Clausen?
Just a question about the next step in the bill.
Actually, we were discussing that, okay, about whether it can go to the floor. It's not been requested by the fiscal analyst or anybody. Right. So unless Human Services comes up with a fiscal note.
They do.
There's no one's compensated. I wanted to make a comment personally about the homeless youth, because I had two young women in my office today who are homeless, and through the assistance of one of the local agencies have, you know, been able to get their lives together, go to college, have stable housing, be working. One of them was like working full-time plus volunteering plus raising her children. So I think these are, and she said she was homeless for about 3 months, living in her car or, you know, with friends. And, you know, thank God that's a fairly short period of time to be homeless, unless, of course, you're living in your car when it's 20 below zero. But, you know, some support services. And I'm also familiar that the foster care system, when young people are sent out into the world at age 18, just think of your own children and yourself, where you were at when you were 18. You know, I mean, I went and rented an apartment with a girlfriend because my mom wanted me to pay $40 a month or something, $60 a month. And I could get an apartment and pay $45 a month. And I thought, oh, I'm saving $15 a month. Oh, I forgot about food and electricity and telephone and laundry. And I was an A student. But they often don't have the kind of practical experience in terms of how you can survive in the world. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, a question, and then I want to, you know, ask another question after that, please. And that is this only to deal with homelessness?
Senator Clausen.
No, Madam Chair. It's to look at the needs of emerging adulthood, young people, people that are having difficulty, so it covers a larger gamut than homelessness. My background has been in homelessness, so I kind of has been giving my personal experience, but it covers more than that.
And did you want to respond, Ms. Reagan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Johnson, I think the concept is disconnected youth. So youth who really are homeless or at risk of being homeless or at risk of aging out of foster care without a permanent connection to an adult, risk of aging out of the correction system. Those disconnected youth.
And Madam Chair, I asked that question because that's what I thought it was, but it seemed to me that the committee was only focusing on homelessness, and I thought it was more than that. And I want to say that I have very personal relationship with some people that I am very, very worried about. Not because they're being cared for now, but in a couple of years, we'll be out of the system, the welfare system, or the, what did you call it here, the child welfare system. And there's no one there to take care of them. And there's no one there that can take care of them right now. And so it's people like this. It's people that are homeless for 3 months is really, I mean, it's serious, but it really isn't the big problem that I see. I see people that are mentally ill, and they don't know how to take care of themselves, and they don't have parents and that will care for them or help to guide them. They probably wouldn't be guided anyway by these parents or grandparents. And so it's people like that that I think that you are looking for and wanting to provide the assistance that maybe people like yourselves who have a lot more knowledge and experience of what's available out there and what maybe works in some ways that some of us haven't found out about. And so I really do support the task force. I think it's worthwhile for probably a small amount of money that's put together, and that will be done in a year and a half.
Then Senator Johnson moves that Senate Bill 991 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Claussen. Senator Dahl.
Sorry.
Went to the floor, right?
You made a good
speech. Is there a division on that?
No, we've moved on to the next bill.
Okay.
But you know, these people can get together on their own, right? They want to get something established so they have to pay for it. They can do it. There's a lot of money in doing themselves right now. I have a great
Madam Chair, members.
Senator Dahl.
Senate File 1224, and this does create a task force, but I'll tell you why. I do have the A7 amendment, and this just puts the language in the template that the Senate likes to have.
Okay.
To about membership on the task force.
So you worked with our staff, and this
yes,
is
we did.
Recommendation. Okay, Senator Dahl moves the A7 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Dahl.
Well, this bill has evolved, and as it went through education policy a couple times, this is about the Minnesota Teacher Licensure Exam, and if you've not read the paper or seen on WCCO or elsewhere, there's a number of emails that I've received. A number of people have had great difficulty in passing the basic skills component of the Minnesota Teacher Licensure Exam. And my original bill was to eliminate that. Where this bill has evolved is we really want to take a look at the test itself. And so we've put in place the second version of this bill, put in some place some waivers, would take us up to the task force. The task force is, which is what the amendment is about in our purview here in this committee, will determine whether the assessment content is relevant to the teacher subject area licensure. You can see what we're trying to find out. The scope of the assessment content is documented to correspond to curriculum, on and on and on. So we're really make sure the test is not culturally biased, et cetera, et cetera. So we really want to take a good look at the test itself and what kind of teachers we might be losing because of their inability to pass the basic skills portion of that. A number of testifiers, we had an art teacher in Pillager who is out of waivers. He cannot pass because of a learning disability. He cannot pass, I believe, the reading portion of the test. We have teachers that English is their second language that we certainly need in the classroom.
We have other persons with learning disabilities who have not been really given any accommodations on the test. So this does not eliminate the basic skills test. It creates a bridge to make sure that we have the right test in place, and the task force is going to look at that, give recommendations to the Minnesota Board of Teaching, and then once that's done, there is then only two waivers, basically, that are allowed after the task force has completed its work, which we put that in place as well. So, again, we're not eliminating. We're allowing more flexibility in making sure that we have the right test to make sure that teachers are not being kept out of the classroom because of their failure to pass this particular test. A number of you have heard the bill in committee and education policy. I'll stand for questions. By the way, Madam Chair, the board task force does include a couple of representatives from the business community as well, which is, again, they voice some concerns about the kind of test that we are asking our teachers to take.
Are there anyone who wants to testify? Are there any questions from members of the committee? Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, is there someone, some group or something other than yourself bringing the bill forward? And then how do teachers get into teaching if they can't do the basic skills? Or how do they get a waiver to get into to be able to teach and not be able to? Do they bypass the basic skills test or the assessment to begin with?
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, the tests have been changed. There used to be a Praxis 2 or 3 or something, but this is a new test, and the results are pretty disappointing. Almost 25% to 30% of people are not passing this new test. By the way, basic skills, it's a college-level math that they're asked to do. And so this is something that's new, and we're finding that a number of people are not being able to pass this test. There's a great cultural divide, too, in terms of students of color that are not able to pass this test. But, again, for the reasons I gave you, English is not their first language, and learning disabilities. A dyslexic person only giving an hour to take a reading or writing test, you can see why that might be difficult for them. This art teacher who the staff and students love with a learning disability, he's out of turns. He can't take the test anymore. He's going to lose his job. He's going to lose his job in Pillager, Minnesota, a $38,000 a year job because he can't pass a test, even though it's proven in the 5 years he's been there. He's a fabulous teacher. So, again, basic skills, a little misnomer. I bet you I would not be able to pass the math portion of that test now, and I've been a teacher for 29 years. It's just, we have teachers that come out of college after all of the other rigor of getting in college, doing the student teaching, doing all of their foundational work, doing their observations. We're not taking away their pedagogy or their content area tests. This is just, and again, we're not eliminating the basic skills. We are making sure that we have a system in place that allows for waivers and appeals process and making sure we have the right test in terms of what is basic skills.
Senator Torres Ray.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Anderson, I just wanted to let you know that this is a provision. I hate to use your time, Senator, because this is an education discussion, but we need to put some context to this question, of course. This was a provision, a part of a larger provision that was part of an important discussion in education, and we spent, a number of hours, Senator Anderson, Senator Thompson is part of the committee, Senator Johnson, Senator Wicklund, Senator Dale. So I just want you to know, just to put it a little bit in context so that you don't feel like we're not talking about it here, but we had ample discussion about what to do, and so the idea of creating a task force to review this was part of the compromise because we need to come back to it to really review some things that we cannot agree on. And so just to put a little bit of context about you know, I don't want to take too much time on education, but.
Senator Hall.
Senator Torres-Ray, you make it sound like you all agreed to do that in your committee. Is that true? It was unanimous to do this?
Senator Torres-Ray.
Excuse me, Mr. Senator, what part? What?
Well, you just talked about it had a discussion, and it made it sound like you all agreed in your education committee that this should go forward. Is that true?
Senator, thank you, Madam Chair. We agree to form this the part that is before you in this bill. Yes, we are continuing to disagree around some of the issues around assessment and how we treat that and what should be done. So that will continue to be part of the conversation. But what we agree on is that this is a task force that needs to be in place, and we need recommendations because we need to come back to this. So,
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, my first bill got struck down. It eliminated the basic skills. Right. I do believe, and Senator Thompson can maybe correct me, I believe it was a unanimous voice vote to pass this bill out of the education policy.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, do you have any of the, and kind of jumping off of Senator Anderson's, any other groups, School Board Association, Principals Association, are any of those groups behind you? Because if not, it sounds like it's just you, but it'd be interesting to hear from some of those groups.
Madam Chair and Senator Hall, no, actually, I had really good support. Scott Kroonquist spoke not only, I don't think he spoke at the committee, he spoke on TV. Everyone agrees there seems to be an issue. This is Cindy Chris, right, from MACD, the Minnesota Association of College and
Colleges for Teacher Education.
Teacher Education. She spoke for me before. There's numerous groups. You should see the stack of emails I'm getting from principals, from students who can't pass the test, and from college educators like Ms. Christ, if she wants to briefly speak.
Ms. Christ, welcome to the committee. I know you were here last night until 8 o'clock, so thank you for coming back.
I was. I'm glad you got to the bill today, Madam Chair. Thank you. Members of the committee, I would just make a couple of comments that relate to a few of the points that have been raised, I think particularly by Senators Hall and Anderson. One is that, yes, I've spent a lot of time with folks from the School Board Association who are supportive of this. With the principals' associations who are, as Senator Dahl said, with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. So all of the organizations with whose representatives I've spoken from the K-12 side are in support of this. I might mention that one of the challenges with this test is not only that it was set at a much higher level than, as was stated, you might associate with the term basic skills. There's been another challenge with this test. The Board of Teaching is the entity charged with entering into a contract with a testing organization to put in place all of the tests that are offered. The previous contract was with ETS, and those were the Praxis tests. Those are national tests. So they had been used elsewhere for a number of years before they were adopted in Minnesota. And one of the things that allowed us to do in Minnesota was that the Board of Teaching could set cut scores on the test but not hold students accountable to those cut scores until they had a chance to see how Minnesota teacher candidates had performed. When this new contract was let with Pearson to develop these metal Minnesota teacher licensure exams, because the whole testing system was already in place, I think the Board of Teaching felt that it had to hold students accountable for their performance on these tests before we'd had any experience with them. So in a sense, our teacher candidates have been, and I don't mean this to sound negative, but they've been guinea pigs, basically, held accountable for their performance on the test before people knew how it was even going to work, because it was developed specifically for Minnesota in order to specifically align with Minnesota's P-12 and teacher preparation standards. And so what we've seen is that the level of student performance has gone down significantly compared to the previous tests, even though nothing has changed with that would contribute to that in our teacher licensure programs.
Senator Hall.
Thank you. Are we talking about how many teachers have taken these tests? And are we just talking about a few that aren't able to pass it? Or are we talking about a large percentage?
We're talking thousands of teachers that have not passed the test. We are really talking thousands of teachers. Probably got some exact numbers here somewhere, but no, it's quite significant.
Senator Dahl, then what happens to those teachers when they can't pass the test?
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, they're out of work. This woman who spoke in our committee before went through the whole college experience to get her teaching license, ready to go out in the world, and she can't pass the test. She's done. She's toast. The Dan Devine and Pillager, 5 years a teacher. He's done. He doesn't get to teach. It's one story after another. I'd like to bring the stack of emails I have. It's heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking. These people that want to go into this profession for all this money, and they cannot keep their jobs or get into the profession, and there's such a need. And I just want to make sure, again, you should all know that a test does not determine a person's true ability, whether that's a student in the classroom or whether that's a teacher trying to get in the career field. Mm-hmm. And again, we're not going to take away their content test. A math teacher should know math. A science teacher should know science, okay? Or their pedagogy, which is the art of teaching, how to test and formative assessments and summative assessments and classroom discipline and grading. That's there. But art teacher knowing math or the shop teacher, maybe the writing part, maybe a little troublesome because of a learning disability. That's where we're seeing the problems.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But it sounds like it's more than those that are having learning disabilities. Getting a liberal arts college degree, I had to take a lot more classes and be proficient in all types of subjects, even though it wasn't my major. I would assume all teachers do that to be proficient. And so you would think a basic test is basic. Now, granted, they're teachers, so a basic test isn't basic for a high school student. It's basic for somebody that's graduated from college and a teaching degree. I am concerned that thousands are not passing these tests that are out of work.
Right. Then you kind of think maybe there's a problem with the test.
Exactly.
Not the tester. Testee.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, I think that's a key point. We have folks in our programs, obviously, who are experts in, who are psychometricians, who are experts in testing. And this is a question they're raising, because these students are meeting high standards to get into teacher preparation programs. They're meeting high standards to get through their preparation program. They're taking required math courses. They're taking required science courses. They're taking, well, obviously, you don't take reading courses in college, but they're taking required language arts courses. They're doing very well in them. They're maintaining the required GPAs, and they're still not passing this test. So for those with learning disabilities, that is a problem. Students have test anxiety, and these are timed tests taken in computer labs. So a student who has math problems may be sitting at one computer trying to do the math test, while the student next to them is taking the writing portion and clicking away on the keyboard, and that's distracting to the student next to them who already is anxious. So there are also some issues about how the test is administered. But there is this growing sense that there's something flawed about the test itself.
Members, I just heard about an elementary school teacher who was nominated for Teacher of the Year who couldn't pass the test, took it five times because she couldn't pass the calculus on the basic skills test. How many of us took calculus in high school? Not me. That doesn't sound like basic skills to me. And why would you need calculus to be an elementary school teacher anyway? You just need to have a big smile and a lot of patience and a warm heart and a lot of patience. Any more questions? Because we still have this pension bill to do yet. Senator Host Hosley. Anyone else?
Somebody would like to.
Testifier?
Mr. Robert Feldman.
Oh, okay.
We're in the task force.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and appreciate the efforts of Senator Dahl and the Senate Education Committee for bringing the bill in its current form. So in you have a pension bill.
And Mr. Bartholomew, we have wandered off
yes,
the topic, but we really are here to talk about the advisory task force. I mean,
well, yeah, well, yeah. And I just
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Thompson.
I haven't opened my mouth because I don't think we're going to get to education policy, but we have. So
right.
Since we did, I think the other side deserves to be heard.
Oh, okay.
Well, and thank you, Madam Chair and Senator. I was not planning to testify, but I just wanted to highlight a couple things that we've suggested. First, I would also let you know that the test that was adopted, the MEDL in basic skills, was developed with Minnesota teachers and higher ed faculty, MACTE faculty. They developed the test, the questions. They also recommended what the passing score should be. So it's while Pearson developed the test, it was done with and by our own teachers and higher ed faculty. I think one of the things, there's been a lot of anecdotal discussion about whether it's calculus and accommodations for special ed. One of the things we've suggested, it would be fantastic to have the test vendor come and talk to people. You know, there's a lot of stories out there, some accurate and some, I suspect, the test vendor would be good to talk to. So I just wanted to put okay. that out there. The test is a legitimate, psychometrically sound test that's been developed with our own teachers and using their recommended task force. I think Senator Dahl's doing a great job. There seem to be some issues with what's going on. Where the bill is, we weren't planning to testify. I think the better thing is ask what's going on, what's fact and what's not, and proceed from there. But thank you
very much. That was very helpful. And I know I let the committee wander off the topic because I'm interested as well. And whenever I try to bring us back, then I get chastised because it's not fair. So.
Well, Madam Chair, I meant
Senator
no disrespect,
Thompson.
But
I know, I understand.
I wasn't going to say anything because this was heavily vetted in education.
Right.
But I got the feeling it was okay to discuss the policy until we were going to get the other side.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to convey that impression. Actually, I'm going to blame Ms. Josephson because she leaned over and whispered to me, "You're supposed to stick to Section 4. Because she wants to go home yet tonight. Any other questions, comments, issues, testifiers? All right, then. Senator Dahl?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move Senate file. I don't know where it goes.
1224. It goes to the floor.
Roll call.
It goes to education finance because it all has to come together. This is part of another bill, Senate. So this
okay.
is part of your other bill. It goes to education.
It goes to finance. All right.
Senate file 1224, as amended, be recommended to pass and move to education finance.
And a roll call was requested. The secretary will take the roll.
Pappas?
Yes.
Eaton? Hall?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Dahl?
Yes.
Hayden?
Yes.
Housley?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Peterson? Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
No.
Torres Ray?
Yes.
Wicklund?
Yes.
On a 6-5 vote, the motion does prevail and the bill is passed and sent to the Finance Committee.
Madam Chair,
Senator Torres Ray.
You know, I see these bills, and probably I don't know what section of this particular one, but it might be 2 pages, and they have printed the entire bill. I am so glad they didn't print the entire education bill and just, you know, actually they printed 6 pages, and it was actually only 1 page that you needed to print. But I think it's so distracting to get these bills because we're so tempted to read and have a conversation, which I appreciate. It's just, I don't think that we should get copies of the entire bill. I think we should just copy the section that we need to act on, because it's just too much paper. I'd like to make that request.
Senator Torres Ray, we will take that under account, and I will talk to my staff. I'm sure we won't talk that way. I would totally agree with you.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it.
And if you'd like to make that the motion,
it's too late.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're having fun, but that is a good idea. I agree with you. Yeah, when I see those things, I go, why are we doing this? I always figure there's a good reason. Senator Pappas, are you ready to present
your
bill?
Yes, I am. Mr. Chairman, we do have an A-16 amendment, which Mr. Martin has, if the page could come and pass that out.
Okay.
Just a technical correction to a technical bill. Members, this is what we call Omnibus Bill 1, and it was approved by the Pension Commission on Tuesday evening. And it is, we divide the bills into two. The Omnibus Bill 1 is a technical, non-controversial cleanup bill passed unanimously by the Pension Commission. And then Pension Bill 2 is the one we will be hearing after the break. We're going to have one more meeting on probably the Wednesday after the break, because the Pension Commission did not approve Omnibus Bill 2 yet. You have the bill in front of you, and you have a 14-page amendment. I'm going to read you a one-page summary that just describes each article. So we're not going to, but you have all the information should you desire to look at that. But you have my assurances that this is all technical, cleanup, non-controversial. We are only allowed to put that in Omnibus Bill 1.
Is this your first stop with this?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to move it?
Move the A-16 amendment? Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Senator Pappas, you also have the A-1 amendment. Does that go with the...
The A-1 amendment we're not doing.
Oh, we're not doing that?
Okay. Senator Pappas, move
first
the...
First, we have to do the Sleedall amendment. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I did this wrong. First, we have to do the delete all amendment. This is what we do. We prepare the pension bill and pension commission, and then we amend it onto a vehicle bill, which is Senate File 489. So my first motion should be to move the delete all amendment, which is the 15A.
Senator Pappas moves the delete all amendment, A-15. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Ayes have it. Amendment is approved. Senator Pappas.
Then I will move the 16A amendment, which I just saw. Maybe Mr. Martin could just explain it.
This one. Mr. Marcus.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Larry Martin from the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. The 16A amendment that you have does three things to the delete everything amendment. There were some unnecessary references to police relief associations. All police relief associations have now consolidated as of 2012, and so they're unnecessary. We missed these when we were going through preparing Article 5 of the bill, and so these correct that. The amendment to page 89 and the amendment to page 134 relate to Bloomington Fire. There's an unneeded provision in a current statute that's being turned into a Bloomington-only local bill, local act, and so this does away with that unneeded section. The remainder, this would be pages 112 to 117, and the other amendments to 133 and 134 relate to some provisions for the recent consolidations of Minneapolis, Fairmont, and Virginia. There are provisions that representatives of those funds would rather keep in current law than amalgamate into a broader single section, single provision in Minnesota statutes. And this gives us time to make sure that we have all that amalgamation correct rather than what's in the omnibus bill at the moment.
So for the record, Mr. Chair and members, I'm just going to briefly summarize each of the articles. Article 1 says that the State Board of Investment would be allowed to invest in swap contracts through a recognized market. Article 2 is with respect to retirement plans administered by the Minnesota State Retirement System, called MSRS. Contribution rate revision provisions are revised. Expanded authority is granted to retain medical advisors. Annual earnings reporting are required to be provided by disabilitants. And obsolete or outdated plan requirements are clarified or revised. The Constitutional Officers Retirement Plan is merged with the Legislators Retirement Plan for actuarial and financial reporting purposes. Article 3 relates to the PERA, Public Employees Retirement Association, and their administered retirement plans. A membership exclusion for students is modified. Trusts are permitted to be designated beneficiaries for death refunds. Some MRF benefit provisions are clarified to meet federal Internal Revenue Code requirements. Approval of privatization benefit coverage for privatized hospitals is delegated to the PERA board, and the Social Security leveling optional annuity form is repealed. Article 4 is to address the statutory headnote identification concern of the reviser. The formula percentage rates for each plan are specified in each plan's law rather than aggregated in a single section in Minnesota Chapter 356. Article 5 are various laws relating to local police or paid fire relief associations that were made obsolete by consolidations, and they're repealed, and cross-references are updated or revised. Article 6 says involves municipalities with fire departments seeking to join the statewide volunteer fire plan. They're given a longer period of time to approve the request. White Bear Lake is authorized to pay a funeral benefit to some older current retirees, as was formerly permitted. Requires municipal approval of any change in the interest rate payable on deferred service pensions, and implements the other recommendation of the State Auditor's Volunteer Fire Working Group. Article 7, more individual cases. A state employee, a former Northfield employee, and a current Wright County employee are authorized to purchase prior service credit for previous uncredited service. MAPE employees who are not state employees on a leave of absence are permitted to be MSRS general members, and some non-spousal optional annuity form designations can be terminated by the retiree and the designated survivor. Article 8 says that the State Auditor's Office is required to provide periodic information on the investment opportunities with the State Board of Investment and about benefit coverage opportunities with the Statewide Volunteer Fire Retirement Plan. That was a little conversation I had with the fire chief earlier. The various statewide and major local retirement plan governing boards are required to formulate implementation schedules for optional annuity and actuarial equivalent early retirement reduction factors, and notify the pension commission of those schedules. Just wanted you to know what you're voting on.
Should we vote on the 16A?
They approved it. Members, did we vote on the 16A amendment? We did.
Okay. She said we did. Yeah.
Did. All right. So if anyone has any questions, sure, again, about any of these technical provisions, Mr. Martin is here to address those.
Okay. You want to hold one second, Senator?
I didn't think so either.
Madam Chair, several of us are not sure that the 16A was adopted.
I'll move the 16A amendment.
Okay. Senator Pappas has moved the 16A amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. 16A is adopted. Okay. To the bill, now that we've read the entire bill.
And also, Senator Hayden and Senator and Senator Johnson can answer questions, too. They're both on the Pension Commission.
Any questions for Senator Hayden? Any questions, members?
Trust me.
Hearing none. Do we have any other testifiers?
These are, like I said, these are all purely technical or cleanup provisions. I think when we bring the big bill in that has more substantive policy issues, we'll have some testifiers.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Martin, is this a good bill?
Yeah.
He's about to go.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mr. any Martin. Bill that the Pension Commission recommends, I think, would be.
Your job is intact.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 489, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor.
Okay. 489 has been moved as amended and to be sent to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same. Ayes have it. The amendment is accepted.
Mr. Chairman, you can adjourn the committee.
And without any other business, we will adjourn our meeting. Thank you. Sure.